HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Brought to you by Irish Life Health.
Okay, so today I am joined by Teresa Kilmartin. Teresa is Chief People Officer for Europe for Irish Life and Canada Life. Teresa, you're very welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Declan. Great.
Brilliant. Why don't you just quickly introduce yourself and say what you do?
So I'm a Chief People Officer both for Irish Life Group and for Canada Life Europe. So I suppose anything to do with people, so everything from how we attract and recruit people coming in the door, how we look after them while they're working for the organisation, and then how they retire from the organisation. That all comes under my remit.
And it's been a strange couple of years. I think we'd be probably in agreement on that. What are the biggest challenges on your plate, on senior HR people's plates at the moment?
Declan, I'd say there are two key things. One is cost of living. So particularly for our lower paid employees, I think that's one of the things we've been really conscious about, given, you know, the environment over the last year. So we did make some cash payments in October to a lot of our staff. And I think that was well appreciated, because, again, it just helped in terms of the rising prices of everything at the moment. And the second thing is hybrid working, and I suppose trying to make that work for everybody. I think we're all trying to figure that one out still.
So a lot of organizations are tackling the cost of living thing at the moment. What do you believe is the right way to go about it for employees? Is it straight up additional cash payments in terms of salary, or do you believe it's better to go about it in a more nuanced fashion?
Well, we thought long and hard about it, and we felt at the end of the day, especially with the government's extra incentives for, you know, sort of for cash payments and not, or non-taxable cash payments, that it just felt better to put the money into the pocket of the individuals. So that's what we did. That's what we focused on last October.
Yeah. And the other thing you mentioned around hybrid working, what's your current approach? What was the thought process as you went through maybe COVID? Maybe just give us a little bit of the backdrop as to how it's developed for you guys.
Well, if I think back, God, it's hard to believe it's about 3 years ago now. I think at the time, nobody believed that people could work from home. And we felt we'd lose loads of productivity and that it just really wouldn't work in practice. But I think what the organisation proved and what our people proved was that people are well able to do that. And everybody really appreciated the flexibility. So we were very lucky that we could keep our business going right through COVID. So I think we were quite privileged from that perspective. And we learned a lot. So again, nobody had the playbook for this. We were really kind of figuring it out as we went along. But the key thing for us was that we wanted to protect our employees. So no matter what, it was keep everybody safe. And we were quite conservative, even in terms of return to office. We very much followed the kind of the health guidelines. And we were very slow to bring people back, particularly if they were reluctant to come back into the office. And I think that served us well, because, again, I think there was quite a bit of flexibility on both sides. Having said that, we then started to do some work in terms of what hybrid would look like going forward. Started with the customer. So what would be best for a customer? What would be best for the teams? So each of the teams that people work within. And then obviously what would be best for the individual. And from that, we figured out, and typically it's a 2 to 3 day pattern. So for most people, they're in the office maybe 2 or 3 days a week and at home the other days. That's pretty much where we've landed for most people. And that's working really well. And really, it's only since last September that we've started bringing people back to the office on a consistent basis. And we found that gradually, week on week, the occupancy levels have started to go up, because I think once people come back, they kind of remember what it was like to come into the office just to see their colleagues, just to get that cup of coffee with people. And we sort of talk about the kind of collaboration, communication and connection. And for us, they're really, really important. And that's what we're trying to establish in terms of community.
Yeah, no, I think it's been interesting. I think when people, after spending so long working from home, I think a lot of people were naturally averse to going back. But once they had sort of sampled it, even on a small scale, people sort of forgot the benefits to it. Did you change your offices in terms of configuration, what they were like? Did you do anything different physically in terms of the office spaces?
Yeah, so we'd kind of quite a complicated setup because we were also going to invest in doing a total refurbishment of our main office building. So we also took the opportunity then to move people out of that office building, making it ready for when we could get the investment to put the money into the new building. So we were moving people to different parts of the campus. And again, we took the opportunity to think about new ways of working and trying to set things up differently. So, for instance, we got rid of all the executive offices, which used to be kind of on the ninth floor, which kind of felt in the new environment, just didn't feel like the right message for our people. So again, all our senior executives sit in with their teams, are much more visible. And personally, I find it much nicer to be in with the different people you're working with, and you get to hear more, you get to see more people, and it just feels like a much, much more kind of equitable environment. So that's been really good. We don't have one person, one desk either, because again, it doesn't make sense if you're only in 2 or 3 days a week. So we share desks, you book your desk. And again, that was a big, probably big cultural shift for people. So even, you know, we took all the photographs that were on people's desks and the amount of pairs of shoes under the desks. So, and again, I think people were thinking, oh God, this is going to be awful. And, you know, we're going to have to go to different desks every day. And but it's amazing how people adapt. I mean, we adapted to COVID, we adapted to working at home, and now we're adapting to coming back to the office, but doing things a bit differently. And it just feels a little bit more modern, a little bit more easier to connect with people. And it's more practical in terms of the hybrid world, because office space should be different.
What do you feel has changed, Teresa? You said doing things a little bit more differently. What do you think are the differences?
Well, I think even culturally, the fact that even our, you know, kind of our senior execs are a lot more visible and much more kind of walking the floor, if I could use that term. I think what we haven't figured out yet is when we are in the office, how we should be spending our time. So again, if you're in the office and you're stuck to your computer all day, just doesn't feel like the best use of time. So if you're in the office, that's the time when you should be meeting your teams. Lots more face-to-face contact. That's how we keep our culture and keep that connection with our colleagues. So again, I think everybody's just trying to figure that one out and what's the most productive way of splitting your time. So for me, when I'm at home, I can zip through lots and lots of tasks and it's more efficient and more productive. When I'm in the office, I tend to get into more chats and more spontaneous meeting people, which is really good as well. But it's figuring out how to get the right balance. And that just takes a bit of time.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you. It's for that sort of deep focus work, being at home it's unrivaled in terms of lack of interruptions, etc. But yeah, the meetings, etc. is most definitely better in the office. You touched on something quite interesting there, Teresa, at the start of that when you talked about how you've approached this. And number one thing you mentioned was the customer, what their needs were, which is obviously great to hear. What was the feedback in terms of what they wanted from you guys, if you like?
Well, I think for the customers, it's again, it's that being responsive. And I think too, for our customers, we also had to adapt to more the digital world. So again, for a lot of our salespeople would have been used to calling to people's houses or customers would have come into some of the, you know, the bank branches where we would work. And again, during COVID, that wasn't possible. Or people were very reticent to do that because of obviously wanting to feel safe and being at home. So we had to adapt to a whole digital way of interacting with customers. And what we found is that actually customers love that because it gives them much more flexibility. It's much more convenient. And in a way, we're coming to them in their houses in a way that kind of works. So I think, again, our sales teams managed to adapt really, really quickly to that environment. And I think our customers were happy that we kept open during the whole time with COVID, even though probably our own people were having their own challenges, but we managed to keep the doors, the virtual doors open and keep very much connected with our customers.
And just longer term, where do you think it will go for the office and hybrid working? What do you think, where do you think this plays out?
Well, passionately, I believe in hybrid working and I would hate for us to go back to 5 days in the office. I just think it's, I think people want the flexibility. And I know there was a recent survey that CPL did, which said 74% of talent actually, it's the first thing they look for is our organizations offering flexible working. So for me, it's very much part of our talent offering to, you know, potential people coming into our organization. I also think for if I think of myself, so I had my family and I was in the office 5 days a week and I was doing long commute. I live in the Midlands. And so to be honest, when my two daughters were young, I probably didn't see that much of them because it was a long day. I was gone before they got up and I was probably back and they were going to bed. So for me, if I had had a hybrid way of working at that stage in my career, it would have been amazing in terms of family life and just having that better balance and just having more visibility with my own family. So for me, there's huge advantages of hybrid, which I'd really like to hold on to. Again, it has to work for both. So we have to work really hard to make sure that we don't lose in terms of productivity and customer service. But I think, in fairness, our people have been great in terms of working with us on that.
No, really good points. I'm just going to take a quick break, Teresa, and then I'm going to come back and just talk about other aspects of future work.
Getting buy-in on your people strategy can often be challenging, but it doesn't have to be. At Irish Life Health, we help HR leaders to unlock insights and make data-driven HR decisions. Join over 2,500 HR leaders who partner with us to help their employees live a healthier life. Search Irish Life Health to find out more. Irish Life Health Act is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
So I am here with Teresa Kilmartin, who is Chief People Officer for Europe for Irish Life and Canada Life. Teresa, we were just talking about hybrid working and where that may go. In top of hybrid working, I think when people talk about the future of work, the narrative inevitably moves towards AI and robotics, etc. What's your experience of it? Where do you think that aspect of it will go?
Well, in Irish Life, we've already started to use sort of digital enablement in terms of really taking out some of the more mundane work that in the past people would have had to do. So for me, there's no fear about it. I think it's only got advantages because some of the very routine tasks that people would have had to do before really can be done by technology. So that gives us opportunity for our people to be doing much more interesting work. So for me, that's where I see it going. And just taking out some of the boredom and some of the really mundane part of our jobs.
Yeah, I like to describe it as moving people up the value chain. So exactly what you're saying.
Absolutely.
They're not doing that paper shuffling type exercise that can do. Is there anything you're seeing in terms of the future of the workplace or the future of HR that's interesting you? Is there anything that you're taking note of?
Well, I think in terms of the future of HR, definitely the skill set of what will make a successful HR function of the future is very different from the past. And again, in Irish Life, we've been trying to kind of move with the time. So, for instance, in the past, you'd never have had a head of people experience, for example. Some of the skills you need in a new HR function would be things like marketing, things like data analytics. So, again, being able to provide meaningful information to our business leaders about the people metrics that we have, that wouldn't have been something that we'd have done necessarily in the past. So I think it's healthy. I think we just need to make sure that we do move with the times and move with what the organization needs from us going into the future. And if we have a manager of wellbeing, that wouldn't have happened in the past. So again, trying to look after the wellbeing of our people is really important to us.
Yeah, and do you think the evolution of HR will move more towards that wellbeing space? I feel wellbeing is obviously vitally, vitally important, and I think companies to a different level are embracing it truly. And I think some companies are acknowledging it and talking about it, but possibly not embracing it. Do you think HR will move very much to that as a focal point?
I think HR has to move to that point because, again, it's a key differentiator for us as an employer. In Irish Life, we're lucky because we have our own wellness company. I suppose if we're talking to other clients about our wellness proposition, we'd be mad if we weren't using that ourselves for our own staff. So, again, we'd feel very passionately that this is something really important just to help people, especially in terms of mental wellness, financial well-being, and just trying to help them navigate through what's become a much more complicated world, I suppose.
And Teresa, just in terms of people who might be listening to this, we have a listenership spanning their careers, as in, you know, from the people at the very beginning to more experienced people. What advice would you give the ones who are sort of starting or early on in their HR careers? What advice would you give them as to paths to follow, things to look at, things to study?
Oh, well, I came in as a lawyer. So I started life in a solicitor's practice and decided I can't do this for the rest of my life and kind of fell into HR by accident. So people have different paths coming in. Some of the most successful HR people that I have employed over the years have come from very different disciplines. So they might have a really good operational background, or they have worked, say, in kind of audit or accountancy, or and I think we've got to be kind of broader minded about the types of people that you bring into the HR function, because again, they, if you think about the things we're trying to produce, like we're trying to make sure that we have a proper reward strategy or we have great people experience, or they're not necessarily things that you typically associate with a traditional HR training. So for me, it's about just having that kind of breadth of experience, particularly around people management experience. I think there's nothing like the battle scars of having to manage teams and manage people in lots of different situations to really equip you to be a really good HR advisor.
You mentioned a few things there, marketing, you mentioned data analytics, you mentioned people experience. What do you think is missing from most HR departments at the moment? Or would you have any views on that?
One thing that I'd always be very careful around is commercialism. I think sometimes we can get very detached from the business that we're operating within. So unless whatever you are doing is really aligned and really a priority for the business, really, you kind of have to question the investment. So for me, it's about really understanding your business and understanding where it's going or where it's trying to get to. One of the key things we're looking at the moment is, if we look at our new business strategy, what are the kind of capabilities we need for the future and how do we start building for that? So a prime example, everybody's looking for people with data experience. Hard to get them on the market. So how do we build that capability ourselves internally rather than have to go to the market every time and, you know, compete with all the other, you know, blue chip companies that are looking for the same talent pool? So it's just trying to find smarter ways of actually helping the business to achieve their results.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head on the commercial piece. I think that can be an often justified critique of HR professionals, is that not understanding the commerciality of it, being too fluffy, to use other people's terms. How do you guys go about building capability?
Well, again, I think it's about, first of all, having the clarity about what it is that we're trying to achieve. So first of all, where's the business strategy? What does that mean in terms of capability? And then what are the best routes to get to there? And then who are the people? So trying to identify people that may not be in that kind of don't have that skill set at the moment, but maybe have the propensity to learn. And then how do we set them on the path to do that? So whether it's through kind of educational support, whether we do our own kind of online sort of learning support, or whether it's simply putting them into an area where they can learn from other people. Or the other thing is, we can partner with companies that do have that expertise. So we don't always have to have it internally. We can partner with others. But I think it's that kind of strategic, we call it workforce planning, and thinking to the future in terms of how our organization should be shaped to provide the capabilities needed to produce the business results.
And then more companies are now trying to gauge a person's propensity to learn, their ability to learn at interview stages. Is that something you guys do or would look at doing going forward in with that sort of mindset, as to you might want them to have two or three different careers within Irish Life or Canada Life?
Yeah, because I think sometimes we purely we select people on a technical knowledge or an existing knowledge base. And for me, give me a really good person with great qualities, curiosity, and a kind of drive. And to be honest, they can do anything. So for me, it's much more about the person and their kind of drive to do better or to learn more is what I always look for. So I start there. And if they have all the other stuff, that's maybe like an added bonus.
Yeah, I think the US Army was historically was, you know, you hire on attitude and you train the rest. So something similar to that. Teresa, thanks so much for your time today. Just one final question, if you don't mind. What sort of things excite you now about the future in HR, in Irish life, in Canada life? What's the stuff keeping you up at night, but in a good way?
I think trying to provide the best people experience that we can for our staff. I mean, Irish Life would have a really good, strong culture, but I think our demographic is also changing. So we have lots of kind of newer Gen Z kind of people coming into the organization. Sometimes I think we could be guilty of not really understanding what they want out of life, what's important for them as employees of our company. And I think trying to really segment our population to say what works best. So not one people experience is going to fit all, but trying to really hone in on what's of value for each of the different segments and really trying to customize that to really get better impact.
And how do you go about that?
That's a good question. Well, I think the starting point is just trying to identify who those different cohorts are. And we've started to do some work on that. And then it's just listening, because sometimes we assume stuff and we sort of say, well, this is great because we like it. I'm sure everybody else does. So I think really genuinely listening to each of the different cohorts and figuring out what is it that makes them tick? What is it that's important? Because it may be something that we really haven't got ourselves. We also do a lot of reverse mentoring. So again, having more junior kind of early career people mentoring more senior execs, because it's amazing how the different mindsets, it's a really educational experience.
And it's working out well.
Yeah. It's a great way of just refocusing or rethinking. Because we all have a bit set in our ways, if we're honest with ourselves. 100%. So it's a really good way of challenging the way you think.
Yeah, I have a lot.
You've got to be prepared to listen.
You do, absolutely. I always say to people, I have a lot of recruitment experience, but if I was in a full-time recruitment role again, I would be the first person I'd be getting in as someone who is completely up to date with social media now, not when I was last recruiting. You know, so that very much agree with you. Teresa, thank you so much for your time. Teresa Kilmartin is Chief People Officer for Europe for Irish Life and Canada Life. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Declan. It was great talking to you.
And if anyone would like to know more about Irish Life, they can connect with them on LinkedIn or email corporate.inquiries@irishlifehealth.ie.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Brought to you by Irish Life Health.